On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, the All-Star ballot is out. We run through it, AL, NL, who we'd vote for, who we think's going to win, and a whole lot more. I saw Paul Skenes pitch in Pittsburgh last night against Shohei Ohtani and the Dodgers. Jordan saw Gerrit Cole in Cleveland last night against Austin Hedges and the Guardians. Superstars going at it. And of course, Brayden Montgomery walk-off home run on his MLB debut. This is one of the best episodes I think we've done in a long time. So now would be a really poor moment for you to stop listening. Here we go. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world brave enough to speak out on the fraud surrounding All-Star voting. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And I mean, these mail-in ballots have gotten out of control.
But as far as I understand, I am very much allowed to vote multiple times for Carlos Cortez to be the starting outfielder in the American League. And because the All-Star ballots have officially been released, while we still have many weeks of voting and convoluted structures involving the voting ahead of us, our opener today is our ballots.
Democracy is still alive, at least as it pertains to the position players at the MLB All-Star game. Pitchers, that's a dictatorship. Position players, it's a democracy. You, yes, you can go online and vote a lot of times. For a structure that is more complicated and convoluted than the Electoral College, I'm going to be honest, not going to waste that much time on it. There's like a first round and there's a second round, whatever. What we're going to do today is run through our ballot and tell you who we would vote for, who we want to win, who we think will win. And before we do that, we would like to share our own personal all-star voting philosophy. We talk a lot of stats on this show, a lot of numbies, but when it comes to all-stars, we love to lean back and rest our heads on those cozy narratives.
Yeah, narratives just kind of like what feels good. I think when we're talking end of season awards, where the weight of history, or in some cases, like literally our responsibility as voters in some cases, had, since joining the BBWA, had the opportunity to vote for Rookie of the Year and so on. That is a time to crunch the numbers and make sure you're making the correct objective decision. What we're going to do today is based a little bit on the numbers. I think we're not just throwing out our favorite players and saying this will be the guys we want to see at the All-Star game. But I do think that there's more room for a blend of this guy's having a good season. He's having a great first half. He's been someone we've been talking about a lot. And he's earned this trip in a way that makes us excited to see him represented in the All-Star game. And so I think you'll see as we go through these positions, it's not just always sort by OPS, sort by WAR, and give it to the guy that is the most deserving at this point, which we should also note now is likely to change over the course of this voting process leading up to the All-Star game. There's still plenty of time for some of these players to separate themselves. Injuries also playing a role in this conversation that we are about to have. Yeah. But I do think that that is our broad caveat as we dig into these debates.
And our bias, in a way, is related to the fact that we will be there and that we are usually there at the All-Star game. And so I'm quite literally thinking, who would I like to see? Who do I want to lay my eyes upon? And that is also related to the look at what it means to him, right? I want players who want this, right? Who want to participate. Players who I don't think are going to come up with an excuse to go sit on a beach with their family, which is, you know, nice and no shade to them. But like, I would rather have it to go to first timers or to old timers. Those are my preferences. Enough preamble, enough prelude. Let's get into it and begin with a really interesting one that is American League catcher.
So we're going to go now again. If you pull up the ballot online, it kind of goes position by position. They kind of have both leagues on both sides of the ballot.
We're contrarian.
We're going to go. Yeah, we're going to go AL and then NL, but we will go position by position.
They also do They also do first base, second base, third base, shortstop, catcher, outfield, DH, I think, which is a preposterous order. Just completely out of whack.
Yeah, so we are going to push back there and start behind the plate with the American League catchers. And what a place to begin, because this is one of the most crowded groups that we have. I think if we were going to really dig into the numbers and state our cases, this would be one where you could really go in a lot of different directions. The names that certainly stand out, I think the one that has arguably separated himself statistically is Shea Langeliers of the A's, yes, because of the power numbers. But what Dylan Dingler, by the way, the timing here, the Dylan Dingler game last night was a nice little boost for his stats. He's been tremendous amidst this disappointing Tigers start. Adley Rutschman, I mentioned on Monday, has quietly been off to a fantastic start for Baltimore. Really nice to see him back at near the top of the, you know, catcher war leaderboards. But there's other guys. Brandon Valenzuela, what a story he's been. What an incredible thing it would be if Brandon Valenzuela was an all-star. He walks off Yohan Duran last night. Ryan Jeffers has been great, but he's now hurt. So where are you leaning when it comes to this crop?
So the first thing to understand is that I think Adley Rutschman has to be at the All-Star game because I think he's going to be the only Oriole. Maybe Taylor Ward gets in, but I think Rutschman, even if he doesn't win fan voting, will still have to be there. Shea Langeliers is the most deserving. I think this will end up being Adley, though, on name recognition.
Interesting.
I would vote for Shea.
I think Langeliers is tough to debate at this point. And yes, you just mentioned another very important feature of All-Star rostering, and pitchers are going to be part of that as well. You could just, although unlikely for the Orioles case, but you can certainly find pitchers on some of the bad teams that you can send to the All-Star game. We'll keep our focus on the position players. Adley's certainly deserving, but he's, whatever, 11 homers behind Shea Langeliers or something close to it. So that's an interesting one. But the A's do have other candidates, which is a nice transition. I agree with you, though. I think Langeliers would be my pick right now. Adley Dingler right close behind them. But as we mentioned, the A's, they will have a couple other guys in the mix there, including Mr. Nick Kurtz. And Nick Kurtz, I expect to be, as we move to AL first baseman, I expect Lancaster, Pennsylvania native, or sorry, Lancaster, excuse me. That was close. I almost said that horribly wrong. I believe it's Lancaster, California, Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
If you hadn't corrected yourself, you would have had to duck next time you roll through Amish country.
That's true. We know they're listening. I expect Nick Kurtz to be a main character at this All-Star game. I hope he's in the Derby. I mean, this is an absolute layup of a Derby invite for a million reasons. This is the stadium he grew up going to, grew up a huge Phillies fan. And the dude is incredible. I mean, it's not just because he's hitting in Las Vegas this week. He's one of the best hitters in baseball. He had kind of a weird slow start, but statistically, he's right up there. However, there's another guy who's having quite a good season who I've seen this week in Cleveland. His name is Ben Rice, and he is subjectively the correct answer.
Ben Rice is the correct answer, and because he's a Yankee, he will win the voting. I would vote for Ben Rice. He is all the more important now that Aaron Judge is on the shelf. Wilson Contreras, Munetaka Murakami, and Christian Walker also deserving of shout-outs. Contreras, I think, could be there. Like, he has a real shot. Like, his numbers are that impressive. Murakami, if he hadn't gotten hurt, I think we would have seen there. And then Christian Walker, who has, like, I think 16 home runs. He's cooled off a little bit recently. Mm-hmm. He probably doesn't get there because we'll see Jordan as the Astro.
Couple other notes about Jordan AL Schusterman. First base that I think are interesting. First of all, I hope Murakami is there in some form. I don't know if that means he's in the Derby. I don't know if he gets there, if he gets voted in, if he's healthy enough. Like, I don't know. Murakami, let's acknowledge him. Contreras is interesting because he could just be the Red Sox representative. I mean, it could still be Aroldis Chapman or a reliever, but they don't exactly have a bunch of candidates. And then the other important thing to mention here is that, you know who it's not going to be? Vlad Jr. Now, I guess Vlad Jr. could somehow get voted in, but he has made the last 5 All-Star games, and a lot of that is also through the voting, but also some tremendous seasons. And I don't expect to see Vlad Jr. at the All-Star game this year, which is... that's significant. So I feel like that is worth mentioning.
Telling me that after game 7 of the World Series last year.
Be like, hey, Vlad, it's going to be Ben Rice. Best year you've ever seen. Not it's going to be Ben Rice. It's going to be Munetaka Murakami. This guy who you're about to debate all winter long. It's like, what? What's going on here? On the White Sox.
Munetaka Murakami is going to get $10 from the White Sox, and he's going to be an all-star. Get ready for that. All right, let's move to a particularly weak crop second base.
Yep.
Where, yikes. Ernie Clement, Ezekiel Duran of the Rangers, Jose Altuve legacy inclusion potentially for the Astros, and then Jazz Chisholm Jr., who is heating up. If this isn't Jazz, which it very well may not be, he should be embarrassed. like this was a clear runway for Jazz Chisholm to be the starting second baseman at the All-Star game, and he got off to such a slow start that there's a chance his numbers don't get there.
And yet, I imagine he's still going to do quite well in the voting. I would imagine Altuve will continue to do well in the voting. And then, I'm sorry, I got to mention, statistically, he's up over 150 plate appearances. Travis Pizan is right there. I mean, I know I was promised that I wasn't going to mention stats, but OPS-wise, he's right there as well. So this is still open. This is one that trying to predict exactly who it's going to be is tough to stay at this stage. But I agree with you.
I do think it is important to note that when you go to the ballot, what stats are there, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you take a glance at it, I'm going to use Ernie Clement as an example. It says average, home run, RBI, OPS. Average being first is significant because Ernie Clement's average starts with a 3. And I think if your average starts with a 3 and you're going on and you're voting for the All-Stars, I think that is like a very relevant factor for a lot of people. So keep an eye on Ernie Clement. Let's move to third base. The hottest of corners, Junior Caminero, Miguel Vargas, Jose Ramirez leading the pack.
I think this is one where he had another home run last night. Miguel Vargas has, I think he's earned this. I mean, Ramirez is heating up. Yeah. His defensive base running have been incredible. So he's still, you know, munching up wins above replacement. But this is also one where the White Sox have to be represented in some form. Do they end up getting multiple All-Stars? What happens with Murakami, Colson Montgomery, et cetera, et cetera? I don't know, but Miguel Vargas is one of the best, biggest, and most convincing breakouts of the season. Yes. And I think he would be my vote right now.
I agree. I think Caminero wins off name recognition, which is an amazing thing to say for a Tampa Bay Ray. Moving to shortstop, Bobby Witt Jr.
Caminero's been awesome. It's not like I would be mad to be watching Junior Caminero. Yeah. Yeah,
sure. He's been crushing it. Also, we need him in the Derby again. Shortstop, Bobby Witt Jr., Kevin McGonigal, Colson Montgomery.
So as we've mentioned a few times in recent weeks, Bobby Witt Jr. lapping the field in terms of wins above replacement. That's a lot due to his incredible shortstop defense. Offensively, has picked it up. His OPS is over 800. There's no one really running away with this offensively. Montgomery's right there. He certainly has the power numbers. McGonigal's only got 4 homers, but we know he's been one of the most consistent Tigers hitters. So I think
it's got to be Bobby.
It still has to be Bobby.
It's still Bobby. It's still Bobby because like Gunner has been bad. McGonigal isn't quite like Bobby has been below his powers, and McGonigal is still not at the full force of his powers, if that makes sense. And I expect those two to trade off for a long time. But I want to be able to look back in 10 years and be like, wow, Bobby Witt Jr. started how many All-Star games? And I think even in a down year, he is the best player in this field. Let's go to outfield. A crowded mix, as always. Aaron Judge will... So here, this is interesting. If Aaron Judge had been healthy, he would have gotten the most votes in the American League, right? Does he still get the most votes in the American League? And if not, who does?
I assume he will because he's still Aaron Judge. I think, but to that point, this is where if, you know, Yankees fans are getting out there and getting excited, Cody Bellinger is having one heck of a season. And I think that maybe Yankees fans are like, well, I know Judge isn't going to be there, so let me throw my support behind
Cody
Bellinger.
Sure, but Cody Bellinger isn't winning the vote. Like, he's not finishing with the most votes. That's not happening.
Okay.
You have to have broader appeal than that. So I think this is a transition to Mike Trout.
Well, let's see.
I think let's there see. Is a chance with Judge down and Trout up that Mike Trout regains his position as the top vote getter in the American League. He will definitely be at the All-Star game. He will definitely get enough votes to start, especially with Judge hurt. Other guys worth noting: Randy Rosarena, Byron Buxton, Riley Green, Julio Ramirez, Luke Raley of the Mariners, Taylor Ward of the Orioles, Carlos Cortez of the A's. It's kind of a light group, especially compared to the National League outfield, which is preposterously stacked. I think when the voting dust settles, it will be Judge, Trout, Bellinger. If I was voting, like, if you were casting a ballot, would you vote for Judge? I think you still probably should vote for Judge, even though he won't be there.
I wouldn't bother because it's like, it's not like I feel bad that Aaron Judge is, it's just circumstantial. It's a waste of a vote, in my opinion. So it sounds like you still agree with me that Bellinger could still be in the top mix there. I think he's going to get in and start. Okay, well, to that point, I went back and looked at where the voting was at last year. I just pulled up the second ballot update, and I looked at American League outfield a year ago. Judge was obviously well ahead of everybody else. Riley Green was second, and he's also someone that's, if he was second at this time last year, I expect him to be in the mix again this year. Now, it's different because the difference Tigers is last year,
people were excited about the Tigers last year at this time. Like, Tigers fans were like, I love thinking about the Tigers and voting for my Tigers.
And do you remember who else was getting a lot of votes in the American League outfield last year? In fact, it was Javier Baez. Hello. Javier Baez. And so he had third. Trout was fourth. Stephen Kwan, who unfortunately has been struggling a lot, was fifth. And then Cody Bellinger was sixth. I think Bellinger is going to be in there. I think Julio's a weird case because he's been heating up, but Randy's more deserving than Julio, frankly. I mean, I think that's kind of tough to dispute at this point. He has another huge home run last night. And then you have the Carlos Cortez's of the world. Like, there are some statistical ones farther down that I'm not expecting to get enough votes, but it would be really, really cool to see them represented. Cortez is going to be tough because, like, is MLB going to go out of their way to put, are other players going to vote Carlos Cortez in? I doubt it, but hey, there's certainly a case.
I agree. If I was voting, I would go Trout, Bellinger, and Buxton would probably be my three. DH, we can fly through. Yordan Alvarez.
Ding, 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 ding. I don't even know. I mean, who is anyone even?
Yandy.
I guess Yandy. Yandy's awesome. Yandy is terrific.
Yandy Diaz.
And like, Yandy's one where if Caminero... Yandy's got to be at the All-Star game. I mean, he's not over Yordan, but like, that's one that I hope is still represented and they don't just stick with Caminero as a Ray. Or, I mean, I guess they're going to have a bunch of pitchers probably too. So yeah, I hope Yandy is there in some form, even if multiple DHs, you don't always see that. All right. That's the American League. Let's go to the National League. By the way, again, we always say it, but it would be fun if we could vote for pitchers. In fact, part of me wishes we could only vote for relievers. Starters, commissioner's office, players, coaches have at it. But just, let me vote for Louis Varlin. Come on. This is an unbelievable season.
The Mizorowski situation last year really put the All-Star voting MLB deep state into the public forum for the first time in a while. And so
what's the
maybe
version
with
of that? This year, I don't know, but the Miz one is very funny in retrospect. The Miz one is very funny in retrospect because
this is the thing. Like, everyone was so mad about the Miz one last year, and then 2 years ago, people were mad that Skeens started the All-Star game on the mound. Remember?
Yes.
And now you look around, and it's like, duh.
The Miz one was also in tandem with Christopher Sanchez not making it.
The two best pitchers in the National League.
So there you go. All right, let's go to the National League. Let's go behind the plate. This is one where it sounds like he's going to be back soon, hopefully. But Drake Baldwin I just think he's one of the best players in the league at this point. Now, friend of the pod, Liam Hicks, has not been catching very much recently. However, but he's on the ballot. Still eligible. He's still eligible there, and his OPS is still right up there with any of these other guys, or at least a lot of them. I know he's fallen off a little bit over the last month. So, but I mean, listen, I'm voting for Greg Baldwin, and I'm not thinking twice.
Greg Baldwin. I think Liam Hicks might vote for Drake Baldwin.
Liam Hicks knows ball, so I wouldn't put it past
him. He knows ball, you know? Drake Baldwin voting for Liam Hicks. Hunter Goodman also will be in the mix here. And then Kiber Ruiz, Jordan, who I just thought sucked. I thought that guy was just bad at baseball. He has been legitimately good, and I think no player on the 2026 Washington Nationals is like more representative of the new era of coaching and development that is going on there than Ruiz. And so just to see his name in the mix is remarkable and a testament to a lot of hard work, both from him and the people that work in DC.
Yeah. And the piece that Spencer Nussbaum had about his kind of rejuvenation a few weeks ago at The Athletic was really, really good. The other thing I would just say about the NL catching group is we've had Will Smith, Willy Contreras, and Real Muto were just dominating this conversation for years. And now probably none of them are going to be there. So that is Will Smith in particular, just struggling to this degree.
He's hurt.
And by the way, this is also part of it where we have to acknowledge that any Dodger is going to have a chance to just win the fan voting. So let's just put that out there. I don't expect Will Smith in this case to be one of them, but that's just something we have to always keep in mind when it comes to talking about fan voting.
First base. Speaking about Dodgers that are going to win the fan voting, Freddie Freeman. This is probably the most crowded, at least top three. Matt Olson, Freddie Freeman, Bryce Harper, who is going to be there and playing at home. Jake Bowers, Spencer Horwitz, Michael Bush, not Mark Vientos.
No, you can vote for him. He's down there. He's right.
He's on
there.
The ballot.
Just at the bottom, both alphabetically and if you sort by OPS. I mean, this is Olson versus Freeman is compelling in its own way from a voting standpoint. And then if we're going back to the sentiment that we led off with in terms of our philosophy, I mean, Jake Bowers making the All-Star team would just be the coolest thing ever. Yeah. I mean, I would love that. And it's not like he hasn't earned it. He's just playing the wrong position in the wrong league.
Here's my prediction. Olson is the starter. No, there are too many Dodger fans. Freeman is the starter, but he's going to drop out to hang out with his family. Like, he had that interview recently where he was like, I'm traveling, I'm on the road too much. I don't think he's going to fly across the country to be there, even though they start the second half on the East Coast. I'd expect Freeman to pull out. So I think that means we'll see Bryce, Olson, and Jake Bowers as the three guys there. I, on vibes, would vote for Bryce because I want the hometown guy to be there.
Well.
But his numbers are definitively worse than Olson and Freeman.
They are. But honestly, if we're going back to what I just alluded to, is this a situation where MLB just puts Bryce Harper in the All-Star game? Also, ironically, right, potentially, Bryce Harper potentially a main character in the MLB players versus MLB. But if with Bryce Harper in Philadelphia, All-Star game in Philadelphia, even if his numbers are worse than some of these other first basemen, and he's having a good season, it wouldn't be a total sham. It would more just be like if he gets in over Jake Bowers, over, some of these other guys, some people might be angry, but I wouldn't be shocked if that's what ends up happening.
Second base, the Bryce Durang show. It will and should be him. He is a legitimate super duper star. Other names in the mix that have a real shout: Xavier Edwards in Miami, Brandon Lau in Pittsburgh, and Luis Arraez, defensive superstar in San Francisco.
I honestly, as much as I've sung Terang's praises and thinks he totally deserves it, and I think if I had to vote, I would do it. I really hope Arraez is there. And that's another one where I don't know that many other Giants, like he could just end up being the Giant that's there. And I just, from a narrative standpoint, Luis Arraez shutting the haters up in a lot of respects, has been awesome.
Also,
I guess Jung-Hoo Lee is another candidate, so they'll have some other guys, but I want Arise there. I really do. But Terang's the answer.
Luis Arise going yard in the All-Star game, like, you can just see that. He only goes yard in non-regular season games. WBC, All-Star game, playoffs, he turns into a power hitter. Brandon Lau is an important character. I'm currently in Pittsburgh. We'll talk about that in a second. Their offense has been so much better this season, and he has been probably the biggest part of that. I think a Pirate hitter should be at the All-Star game. And like, they're top five, top 10 in like most categories after being 30th in like everything, right? I think that is one of the bigger stories of the season. And if you have to pick a guy to be that, I think Lau is probably the right answer. Let's move over to third base, where there is only one right answer. It is Max Muncy, and it is nothing. The NL third base situation is a barren desert, a treeless landscape. It is dry. There is no fruit sprouting. Here, it really is a remarkable scene. Now, part of this is due to a number of famous players having absolute stinker seasons. Bo Bichette, Alex Bregman, Manny Machado, Austin Riley, Matt Chapman has been fine. Alec Bohm has been bad. Nolan Arenado has been good, not great. And so what we're left with is two players on the ballot, NL third base, have an OPS that starts with an 8. Max Muncy and?
I would not have been able to tell you this before I looked at it last night, but it is Curtis Meade,
who would also be Meade of the Washington Nationals.
Unbelievable story. If he's the Nationals, as we are about to talk about, have several other quality representatives, so I do not think Curtis Meade will be at the All-Star game, but what a season for him.
I went like a total dweeb and separated all of the position groups by both leagues to see like which voting block was the softest and the strongest. And NL third base as a unit has the single lowest OPS of any unit in the entire sport, below both leagues' catchers. That is remarkable.
well, shout out Manny Machado. Shout out Ke'Bryan Hayes. Shout out Bo Bichette, who I guess is still being counted as a third baseman, even though he's been playing shortstop with Lindor out. This is what I want to say about this group. You mentioned it, but you kind of just like flew by it as if it wasn't kind of a huge deal. The names in this group that have been this bad, not just that the names that have been in the league that we've been used to being at All-Star games and have been great players like Machado, like, you know, Matt Chapman, even recently with the Giants, like Max Muncy, Austin Riley. We added Alex Bregman into this mix. We added Bo Bichette into this mix. And their numbers have gotten worse. Like, all of this has gone down. Arenado is a little different because he's older. But this, the amount of All-Star games among this group of players might be among the most of any position. That's to be a whole other thing that you could go ahead and sort through, and it's a stupid way to measure it, but you kind of get what I'm saying, right? In terms of what this group of players has accomplished in their careers is astonishing, and yet this year, almost all of them have been terrible. So credit to Max Muncy for not being terrible.
I'm trying to do a write-in for this position right now, like one of the write-in votes, and it won't let me write in 2022 Manny Machado. It wants me to do... 2026 Manny Machado, but I want to vote for 2022 Manny Machado. MLB, please advise.
What was Machado's WCC VBB in 2022?
Pretty good. Finished second in MVP, PPPP. All right, let's move on to shortstop. CJ Abrams, Otto Lopez, Elly De La Cruz, Mookie Betts will get votes because he's on the Dodgers and he's Mookie Betts. I don't think he'll start. The door is open here for CJ Abrams. Elly getting hurt.
He's the answer. I mean, Elly getting hurt made it the answer. I don't even think
it's the answer from a voting, from a statistical, from a narrative perspective. Like, it should be CJ Abrams. He's going up against Mookie Betts and Elly De La Cruz, who on name value, when you look at the voting, are going to put up some numbies.
Yeah, that's true. Doesn't really have to deal with Lindor this year. Trey Turner, not really. I think that it, for the first 6 weeks before Ellie got hurt, it was trending towards being a legitimately interesting argument between Abrams and Ellie.
Yeah.
And Ellie could still come back and make it more interesting. But, I mean, this one isn't hard for me. I mean, it's C.J. Abrams easily. So I agree that it will be interesting where he shows up in the voting because of who he's up against and just the popularity there. But
sure,
I'm not thinking hard about this.
Is there a legitimate argument?
I'm glad you mentioned Otto. And I'm glad you mentioned Otto Lopez.
Otto Lopez, because there is a legitimate Otto Lopez argument that you can make based around defense. And like, he's been so good offensively. He's hitting 341. And I get that C.J. Abrams is a bad defender. It's the All-Star game. Look at what it means to him. That boy, nice. Feel the vibes. Don't care about defense.
Yeah. Marlins are an interesting team in terms of who their representative will be. Xavier Edwards, worthy. Liam Hicks, worthy. Max Meyer is probably the most likely right now, if we're being honest. But Otto Lopez is, I am prepared every year I do the all snub team. And I probably should just write the Otto Lopez blurb now because I am prepared for him to be included.
Outfield, actually, let's just do this quick. National League DH, Shohei Ohtani. Cool. That's out of the way. National League outfield, stacked group. James Wood, Brandon Marsh, Michael Harris II, Ian Happ, Ronald Acuna Jr., Jackson Chirio, Corbin Carroll, Juan Soto, Mickey Moniak. Yeah, Mickey Moniak. Jordan Walker, J.J. Bladé, Pete Crow Armstrong, Jung-Hoo Lee, Andy Pages.
Whew. So, I think that James Wood and Corbin Carroll are just write it in pen. I'm not thinking hard beyond those two. And then you could go, as you just laid out, a billion different directions. I would expect Andy Pages, having earned his way into this conversation, playing for the Los Angeles Dodgers, I think he's going to do quite well in the voting. Who would I say is most deserving? It's probably still just Juan Soto, but this is a great example of me going into this and saying that the outfield should be James Wood, Juan Soto, Corbin Carroll feels really boring, even if it's probably right. I would like to lean towards one of these other seasons and reward that for what they've been, whether it is a Moniak, whether it is a J.J. Bladé, whether it is a Jung-Hoo Lee, who's hitting like 500 over the last few weeks. Brandon Marsh, another one, I think, who's absolutely should be in this conversation in Philadelphia, would be that. So that, I guess that's probably the answer, right? I think that's probably the easy, fun narrative, deserved pick is Brandon Marsh as the third one or one of your outfield spots. What do you think?
I mean, the most fun, like if I was just going vibe wise, I would go Brandon Marsh, Mickey Moniak, Jordan Walker. Moniak being an all-star
in Philly
is so good. That is so good. Yeah.
Moniak in the Derby?
Moniak in the Derby.
Ooh, Moniak in the Derby, I think, is the
Derby,
way to do
there's
that.
A way to make the Derby just so Philly-centric. You go Schwarber, Harper, Moniak, Kurtz, Trout. Pete Alonso as the foil. Just fly him in. People will boo the crap out of him. And then you probably do what? Like Justin Crawford, Rafael Marchand, just to round it out.
Ryan Howard. Just rolling in there. Yeah. just doing his best as the alumni representation.
Matt Stairs.
John Kruk?
John Kruk, you'll be there.
Yeah, that is great.
Matt
who would you, if you remove the sentiment,
if I'm just like voting
for your outfield before we take a break?
I think James Wood. I think James Wood should be there. I think Corbin Carroll should be starting. Soto is the one I would just leave out this year because the Mets, and I want to shoehorn a vibe in there. I would probably go Andy Pages or Michael Harris, dude. Michael Harris, like, it feels like there should be a Brave in the starting lineup, like, for sure. You know what I mean? And if Freeman's going to be over Olson, like Harris has been such a big part of that team this year. Yeah, I'll go Harris. I'll go Harris, Wood, Corbin Carroll.
Fair enough. Jordan Walker, man, like some of the, this is, whew, that is.
Even that PCA, is a crowded, like.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
PCA is still playing elite defense and his OPS now starts with a 7.773. Like he's been going. The other one, just last one to keep an eye on, Carson Bench has been one of the best hitters in the world over the last like month and a half. He was off to such a terrible start that he's not going to get votes. But we might look back at the end of this year and be like, how is this guy not an all-star?
Yeah. We'll see. There's a lot of guys like that, and I'm sure someone else will play their way into it. Guys we did not mention include Fernando Tatis Jr. and Kyle Tucker, and honestly, Ronald Acuña Jr., who left last
Jackson
night.
Jackson Merrill.
Jackson Merrill. God, yeah. I mean, again, you look at some of the other outfielders that we've had recently and how not... not inspiring their seasons have been. All right, Jake, before we take a break, we have to remind everyone once again, because, oh my goodness, they be kicking it starting Thursday. And the all-new 2026 Soccer Pick'em is here just in time for the world's biggest soccer tournament. Make picks. Each round, earn points, climb the leaderboard, play solo, create a private group with your friends, join a public group to play with other fans, or even join a Yahoo Sports group to see if you can beat us. We got to get that set, Jake Mintz. We got to put our group out there.
We're going to crash in the group. You'll crash out in the group round. You're going to crash out after we crash you out.
Yeah, I don't know if you can crash out in this competition, but come find out and join us at yahoofantasy.com/soccerpick'em. yahoofantasy.com/soccerpick'em. We're going to take a break. When we return, we watched some baseball last night, and we're going to talk about it. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. My friend Jordan and I don't just talk about baseball. We watch it too. And last night, we watched two of the best pitchers, on the planet. Let's dive into it. It's a field report.
Why don't you start us off, my friend? You are coming to us from a hotel in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I got to be honest, I think... you know, this is a series, Dodgers in Pittsburgh. Since I've been living in this area, it's like, yeah, I'm going to go see them. However, with the Yankees in town in Cleveland, I decided to hang back and you took the trek up to Pittsburgh, PA, PNC Park, and see Paul Skenes take on the Los Angeles Dodgers tonight. You will see Shohei Ohtani take on the Pittsburgh Pirates on the mound. You had to settle for Shohei Ohtani, the hitter, against Paul Skenes, the pitcher. And yeah, let's talk about it. I know that what happened after Paul Skenes left the game didn't go particularly well, and you wrote a little bit about that. But Skenes is certainly what brought you there in a lot of regards.
Yeah.
And so what were your takeaways?
I am perpetually fascinated by Paul Skenes, the character, who is performatively stoic, who is so process-oriented, who has this military Air Force background, who also has a social media superstar girlfriend, who also throws 100 miles an hour, who is also one of the most popular players in the league. He is many things at the same time. What he was last night was perfectly good. He was not quite at his best. He allowed 2 runs over 6 innings, struck out 7, 6 hits. He had a lot of traffic kind of early on in innings that forced him to work out of the stretch a little bit more than he would have liked. The change of command wasn't quite there. His numbers this season are just a tick below what they've been the last 2 years. Again, the last 2 years, his ERA started with what number, Jordan?
One. Who knows?
A one. This year, we're no longer binary, and it's starting with a 2. It's like a 2.84, I think, which most people would, you know, cut off a pinky toe to have over a full season. Skenes last night was interesting after the game, talking about how he is happy with his process, right? He is someone who is just very uniquely able to separate process from results. And you can pitch to a 197 and a 284 and do the exact same thing, and sequencing and batted ball luck is just going to take you on two different paths. And he is smart enough and has the correct perspective to understand that dynamic. The other Paul Skenes thing that we should definitely talk about is him rolling up to the Little League field this week. Did you see this story?
I did see the story. It would be tough to miss if you were on any social media site, but well-deserved. I mean, it looked like a really, really cool scene. And yeah, if you could relay any additional information you found out about this visit.
So yeah, Paul Skenes, here's how it went down. Paul Skenes was just driving around Pittsburgh on the off day and drove by a field. And because he's Paul Skenes, he stopped and was like, I want to watch some baseball. It was very similar to the energy of the photo of him in the fire truck, where he's like, I'm bored. I'm going to watch some ball. So he goes over and he drives around the parking lot. He told us that he drove around the parking lot a couple times because he wasn't sure if he wanted to get out or not. So he like did a couple loops because he knew that if he got out, he was going to like have to be Paul Skenes. You know, he couldn't just like, what Paul Skenes really wants in this situation, and he had a great time with the kids, like he's great, whatever. He wants to not be recognized and just take in some ball. Like, you know, he ends up staying for 2 hours and signs autographs and like plays catch and like holds like an impromptu clinic the day before his start too, which is incredible. He's in flip-flops the whole time. But yeah, this is so cool. And last night when someone asked him, he's like, yeah, I was bored. And I just like wanted to watch some baseball, but it was a great time. It's like, all right. And that's what I love about Paul Skenes, right? Is even when he's doing something uniquely genuine that very few other players would do, that is this feel good moment, he is doing it with this like laser focused baseball is everything to me intensity. That is a very bizarre combination, but yet comes across as authentic, and I quite enjoy.
And I think it's still even if his outward presenting is what you just described, and I think that, not that that isn't the case, I think he's also someone that has exhibited and has expressed this over the course of his rise to superstardom, being able to appreciate that he was not supposed to be any of this, right? Like, this is not someone who was supposed to be a superstar. So he knows that he has this opportunity to stop and just like change these kids' lives forever, to show up at their Little League practice and see how excited they are for it. So yeah, I'm sure there's part of him that wanted to keep the low profile, but the fact that he was already willing to even contemplate this, I think says a lot to his priorities and his willingness to make a lot of kids' day. So it was really cool, all those scenes. And I don't know if you saw the post that Livy Dunn had about this.
This tells me she's probably out of town too.
Yeah, oh, very much so. Very much so. But it looked like that he like FaceTimed her and was just like, hey, look, I'm just at this Little League field. And she's like, wow, you're a child. Just like can't do anything except, you know, magnetically gravitate to whatever baseball field is nearest to you.
Livy Dunn's like, I'm out of town for one night. And because you're so like, when Livy Dunn's out of town, what is Paul Skenes doing? He is driving to the Little League field and hanging out. It's so funny.
Yeah. Takeaways from the baseball game? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'll bring it back a little bit. You know, with Skenes going up against the Dodgers, it is very, you know, fruitful for the narrative of small market, big market. How long will Skenes be a Pirate going up against this juggernaut? Blah, 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 blah. The thing that I took away from last night is that the Pirates are not quite there yet. Not a hot take. The gap between the Pirates and the Dodgers is big. Ooh, thanks, Jake, for doing a podcast. The Pirates lost all three games in Atlanta over the weekend, and now they've dropped this first one to the Dodgers in embarrassing fashion. 10-run inning in the seventh was a slop fest, a total horror show. The Pirates are better than they've been, and there's still a stink. There's still a piratity to the proceedings that remind me a little bit of like the Mets right after Will Pond sold, where Bob Nutting still being the owner here is relevant. Like, this organization, even though they are better on the field, is not new from a lot of the strings that they're pulling. But, and I think that it leaks a little bit into the total operation. The most encouraging thing for me is that this offense looks real. Now, we'll see how they fare tonight against Ohtani. They only put up 2 runs against Eric Lauer. That wasn't great. The Pirates are a legitimate playoff contender. I'm fascinated to see what they do at the deadline to try and supplement it. Even though they lost by 9 last night, I was relatively encouraged. I was cautiously encouraged.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you're the longest playoff drought in the National League. This is a fan base that is so desperate for a team to even be in the mix. And so I think that the fact that they've shown us enough to make us believe they will be a team we are still talking about in September is worth something. And I don't think that should be just over, because we always talk about the pressure and the urgency with teams like the Guardians and the Brewers, who have been in the postseason a lot and are trying to take the next step in the postseason. With Pittsburgh, and this will be relevant when we get to the deadline too, this is a whole other level, because you're trying to get back to showing your fans you can even be a relevant baseball team in the way that you haven't been for a decade. And Skeens has at least pushed them back towards that. And I agree that the offense being that much better is a big part of that as well.
They have to figure some things out in the bullpen, which completely imploded last night. And I mean, it was just disgustingly awful baseball at the end of last night's game. But yeah, when you have Paul Skeens, like, and Connor Griffin hasn't even gone supernova yet. He's currently on the IL. That is another thing that could just happen at any time. Like, if he comes back and he could just, like, Connor Griffin at some point in the next 2 to 3 seasons will, like, be a top 10 player in the world, probably, right? Top 20 player in the world, probably. And, like, that switch can go off at any moment. It could go off this year. It could go off next year. If it goes off in August, like, watch out for the Pirates.
Yeah, he's dealing with a forearm strain, which basically was preventing him from throwing and playing shortstop. So he was DHing for a few days. Now he's on the IL. Sounds like still they're not too worried about it, and I think we could see him back at some point in the next few weeks. But it was disappointing, because for a player like him, every rep is so valuable for him to make it more likely that he's about to go, you know, supernova. So setting him back a little bit is disappointing. But, I mean, he was already making an impact defensively on the bases, and getting him back in some form will certainly be valuable. Let's head 2 hours west, where I watched the New York Yankees and Cleveland Guardians play a couple of baseball games over the last couple days. They will play the series finale this afternoon, in which the Guardians will try and avoid being swept for the first time this season.
Mm-hmm.
By the time you're listening to this, you probably know the result of that game. But let's focus on what happened on Tuesday night. First of all, I mean, the Monday night game was nuts. It was 3 hours and 41 minutes, 10 innings. The Yankees used 8 pitchers, used their whole bench. They really gritted it out. And then another kind of grinded out, messy, just enough effort on Tuesday. They get the first career home run from Spencer Jones, which was an absolute monster shot to center field.
Crank.
Like 112 off the bat, 443. Slade Ciccone really serving it up there with the cutter right down the middle. But Spencer
Jones
did what
he needed to do. Worst pitch of the year candidate, like you said.
It was truly one of the worst pitch of the years, worst pitch of the season. And then Jazz Chisholm Jr. with a delightful go-ahead home run off Tim Herron, and just pimped it like crazy, took his time around the bases. The tarps off crowd in right center field was chanting overrated at Jazz, and Jazz promptly hit a go-ahead home run, which held on as Fernando Cruz has a 5-out save. That is a preamble to the main topic of this exploration of the New York Yankees that I embarked on, which is centered on Gerrit Cole. And I ended up, this is not what I expected to write about, but it just fascinated me, so I decided, all right, let's just go into this. If you did not watch this start and you pulled up the line, you'd say, oh, God, 4 innings. That's not good. It's Gerrit Cole. 4 innings. It's the shortest start since June of 2024, when he was also coming back from elbow surgery or elbow injury, right? Didn't have surgery.
Elbow boo-boo-ery.
My elbow hurts. So 4 innings, Gerrit Cole. That's not good. Only allowed 2 runs, but the pitch count got up there in a hurry. The third inning was just a mess.
He was sweating. He was very red.
It was 86 degrees. It was humid. It was a disgusting night, and he was just feeling it. And Gerrit Cole was very honest after the game. Like, that third inning was like 30 pitches, and he basically said, I mean, it's always interesting listening to Cole talk after the game, because he can't help but be so honest,
insightful.
He can't just. And so he was the one guy in the, after another rousing victory, he was just like, oh my God, I was gassed. I was exhausted. I was fighting for my life out there. It was survival mode. But he was also kind of laughing through it, because he just realized how absurd it all was. He said that in that third inning, I assume he was talking about the third inning, he said that his heart rate was up over 185. And he was like, I don't remember last time.
He had to run
that
to cover the bag at first, and like fell on his ass.
So it was a very chaotic third inning that had him just going through it. And yet, throughout this mess, Gerrit Cole was throwing as hard as he's thrown all season, including touching 100 miles per hour. And I just couldn't get that out of my head, because for so many reasons. First of all, it's the first time Gerrit Cole has touched 100 on StatCast since 2022. And afterwards, Gerrit Cole's like, yeah, it was hot. I was sweating. I was obviously in just like, I got to get through this. So he was amped up and he was feeling it. But just the fact that he could even access this kind of velocity at this stage, you know, he's turning 36 in September, is amazing. You know who hasn't touched 100 this season? Paul Skenes. And so while there's part of me that thinks, and I wrote about this, that Gerrit Cole touching 100 is now no longer news. It flashes on the scoreboard and we're not looking up there and be like, oh my God, that's 100, because 100 is normal now. Everyone's doing it. Gerrit Cole was the 63rd pitcher this season to hit 100 miles an hour. 19th different starting pitcher to hit 100 miles an hour.
Wow.
I put this out in my story. When Gerrit Cole was a rookie, he led all starting pitchers with 100 mile per hour pitches with 22 across the whole season. Jacob Mizorowski this year has thrown 400. And I believe there are six pitchers that have already thrown 22 starting pitchers that have already thrown 22 pitches 100 miles an hour.
What did Manny Machado say? Game's getting more difficult. Games getting harder.
Miz, Bubba Chandler, Yuri Perez, Chase Burns, Cam Schlittler, his teammate, and of course Shohei Ohtani. But a bunch of other guys are throwing 100, and so it's just he's out there sitting 98, and we're just he doesn't look good, and you're just kind of accepting it. Guardians aren't really phased. Like, yeah, okay, whatever. This guy's sitting 98. What's the big deal? You know, Yankees still gritted it out. And I think Cole, even still finishing that fourth inning, was really impressive, considering like most pitchers would have even been pulled, especially if the Yankees bullpen hadn't been taxed so much the night before.
But what's important about this is that, yes, everyone's throwing 100 now, but the fact that 36-year-old Gerrit Cole can tells you that he's healthy, right?
Yes.
He's not fighting through this. He's going to take some time to, you know, wipe off the rust. Fastball command comes back last. People say secondary stuff, blah. Like, he is on the right path. If he's throwing 100 on June 10th or June 9th, I feel good about him in October.
That was my takeaway, is this wasn't a pretty outing. He'll be the first to tell you it. But knowing that the stuff is there, and we're seeing some new stuff, we're seeing to the sinker now, more changeups, just knowing that he can get to that level in June is so exciting if you're a Yankees fan. And when he does start to dial in all this other stuff, he's going to be one of the best pitchers in the league again. There's no reason to think that he won't be. And that's a huge deal, because the Yankees already have a bunch of other pitchers that are this good, or close to this good. It's funny, because I kept writing like the Yankees ace. I was like, man, I got a couple. Is he? I mean, he is, but is he? So kind of an interesting dynamic there. But
can you have more than one ace? You can only have four. You can't have five aces. That's how cards work.
That's true. But yeah, is that, I guess, have they consulted that for, we'll have to ask Andy McCullough. He's busy right now being a father. All right. We're going to take a break.
I guarantee you he would be down to talk poker on paternity leave. All right, let's take a break. And when we get back.
Wait. I'm sorry. I just got to pause. You think I was referring to poker? I'm talking about the Aces Project.
No, I know, and I'm making a joke about aces and poker.
All right. Because I wouldn't blame you if you thought, for those of you who know Andy, he only wants to talk about poker. But all right, we're going to take a break. When we return, Braden Montgomery, oh my goodness, we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jordan and I taking a break from checking to see if our wives got Phoebe Bridgers tickets. Let's go around the league. Unlike a Phoebe Bridgers song, Braden Montgomery had a great time last night making his major league debut on the South Side of Chicago at Guaranteed Rate. Braden Montgomery becoming, I believe, the fifth player in MLB history to hit a walk-off home run during his MLB debut. Montgomery, a crucial cog in the Garrett Crochet deal, the trade that sent Crochet to Boston. Montgomery, a very interesting prospect with a really fun trajectory. I'm going to pick up the prospect rock, and I'm going to hand it to Jordan Schusterman, as I often do.
Yeah, I mean, we were already going to talk about Braden Montgomery on this show when we heard he was going to get called up. And then he, then this happened. I mean, fifth ever to do anything in baseball that is this simple, walk-off homer major league debut. You could tell watching him round the bases. He was like,
him rounding the bases, unbelievable. If you haven't seen it, watch the clip of him rounding the bases. It is the LeBron James, I can't believe this is my life meme. Like when he's going from second to third, he's like tilting his head back, taking off his batting gloves. And he is living in this like pod of untouchable joy, like this cocoon almost of like Wonderland. He can't believe what is happening to him. And it, because this is such a rare thing, right? MLB debut, walk-off home run. Like it's so good. It's so good.
And I'll give the background on him as a player, but also is so good because Braden Montgomery is like one of the happiest individuals. This guy just radiates positive energy.
Immediate nominee for our Mount Rushmore of kindest baseball players.
And like, and just wow, like you just feel better after you talk to him. And so to see him have this moment, I was fascinated by taking off the batting gloves as he rounds the bases. I assume that's because he didn't want them to get wet.
I assume he wasn't thinking about anything. This is an example, Jordan.
Okay, but then,
sometimes
but
on a baseball field.
Why would
Jordan,
you do that?
Jordan, so Jordan, stop. Shut up. Shut up.
No,
I'm going to play my shut up. I'm going to play my card here. Sometimes when you're doing sports and a moment happens and you get lost in the sauce, you do things for no reason at all. Braden Montgomery does not know why he took his batting gloves off. He couldn't have told you in the moment. He probably doesn't even know he took them off. So do not psychoanalyze this decision that he cannot describe himself.
My slight pushback is I'm going to follow up with people that were there and ask if anybody asked him about this. I will ask him about this when they're in Cleveland.
Great.
Because I'm fascinated. Because my only point is it stood out to me.
It was looks very weird.
I've never it's seen funny. That yeah. specific. You see throw the helmet or maybe even sometimes you'll see like if they have the arm guard or whatever. Anyway, okay. Braden Montgomery, what a moment. Incredible. What a win for the White Sox. That was the first home run that Raisel Iglesias has allowed in like a year. Not just this season. He didn't allow a home run for the last like two and a half months of last season. Unbelievable moment. Okay, who is this guy? Braden Montgomery was a pretty big deal as a high schooler in Mississippi. And big switch hitting outfielder, was also a pitcher. Goes to Stanford initially. Does some two-way stuff because he's throwing crazy hard. Then he transfers to Texas A&M after his first 2 years at Stanford. This was honestly, when he transfers to A&M in 2024, that was one of the first, obviously the portal's been around for a few years,
yeah.
But from a like an NIL standpoint, from a like, oh my God, they went and got this guy. A&M getting Brady Montgomery was a pretty seismic college baseball transaction, I would say.
Absolutely.
That's the best way to put it.
Yes.
And they get back to Omaha, and yet Brady Montgomery's not there because
and he like breaks messes his up leg. His leg, right?
He breaks his leg sliding, I think, in the super regional or in the regional.
Yeah.
And so he's in Omaha on crutches, on like a wheelie, like the leg wheel. You have your leg on one wheel. Anyway, that was also important because that's a big reason why he does not end up going in the top 5 to 7 picks. We've referenced that top of the 2024 draft with all of those incredible college players with these incredible college stats on the offensive side, Cags and Kurtz and Burns and Bizana and Charlie Condon, Weatherholt. Braden Montgomery was in that tier, but because he had this horrible injury at the end of the season, we didn't see him at the end. And also he had some swing and miss concerns. He falls to the Red Sox at 12. As we know, they then very quickly trade him for Garrett Crochet. And he now becomes the last player of this 4-player trade to reach the big leagues, joining Chase Meidroth and Kyle Teal and Wickelman Gonzalez, who's maybe we'll see him again at some point. But those three, Montgomery, Meidroth, and Teal, I mean, this is, it's not like why you trade Garrett Crochet, but if you're going to trade Garrett Crochet, this is what you're hoping for.
Those are three everyday players.
Position player building blocks. I mean, if you're even getting one in a trade like that, that's anywhere close to as good as what some of these guys looks like they could be, you're feeling pretty good. And you got to give the White Sox credit. Now, long way to go for all three of these guys to really prove themselves. But Montgomery is now a switch hitting outfielder. Yeah. Still some questions about his impact batting right-handed. And he was still swinging and missing a lot in AAA. But the power is undeniable, especially from the left side. And you saw with that opposite field home run. I mean, he's got serious, serious, serious juice. When you see the arm in right field, I'm looking forward to those highlights when he finally gets to let that loose at some point. Personality-wise, I just am so excited to see him kind of fit into this White Sox team that already has some of the best vibes in the league.
Right. It's like, oh, what did the White Sox need? A elite, likable character? Finally, something for the 2026 White Sox. It is great. Do you know what Braden Montgomery and Jake Mintz have in common?
Tell me.
Listed as a excellent student by PerfectGame.com, Braden Montgomery, one of the few Stanford baseball players, like with the brain to go to Stanford, he very much smarter than me. This guy, like he was rocking like a perfect GPA, top of the charts student. When we went to Omaha that year, we asked like all the Stanford players, all right, guys, be real with us. Like what percentage of you are actually Stanford quality students? Remember?
They're like,
and every single one of them was like, oh, not me, but Braden is.
They're like, yeah, our best player. He's also.
Oh, smart. The best player. Yeah, he's definitely smart enough.
So, yeah, no, it's awesome. And I just, yeah, I mean, the White Sox have gone from least watchable to one of the most watchable teams in the league. I mean, I'm excited to turn on White Sox.
Yes. Games. White Sox Nats World Series. Book it.
Oh, that would be.
When do those teams
have
play?
Them? Let's just have them play a series in October, whether they make it or not.
Sure.
We don't need a full NIT. Just White Sox versus Nats play like a best of 37 all month long. I would love
oh,
to.
Oh, they already played, dude.
Oh, that sucks. On you. You're the Nats guy.
No, they played in April in Chicago.
Oh, before either so team it, like, was.
Yeah. Before
that's
we knew.
A huge miss.
It was really before we knew.
That's a huge miss. Yeah. Well, hey, maybe we will see them in the World Series. Speaking of World Series previews, one more topic before we say goodbye. Something is going on in Las Vegas, Nevada. This week.
Always is, famously.
Not as much as it used
happens,
to be.
I'll tell you this. Here you go. I got you. Ready? Let's strap in. Strap in. What happens in the Las Vegas ballpark does not stay inside the Las Vegas ballpark as the Brewers and A's combined for 11 home runs in Sin City on Monday night. The A's are playing two Serie this week, Milwaukee, Colorado, in Vegas, as like a, hey, we're going to show up in a couple years. Like, we're the A's. Hello. And because they're playing in a minor league ballpark, the ball is flying. The Jonah Heim home run in this game is the most unacceptable Mickey Mouse BS ding dong that we have seen in the big leagues since the balls were juiced out of their minds. Do you have real concerns with hitting in Vegas? Like, do you think the new park will be a joke in the way that Coors is and will have to like move the fences or adjust? Or is this just an example of this minor league park?
I'm not worried. It will be indoors. They will have humidor. I don't think the demand, maybe on certain days with, I think it'll probably, my guess is it'll play like Arizona. And I don't know how much the dimensions are going to be, what the dimensions are going to be like, but this is a case of a small park where it's hot and the elevation, it's ridiculous. And there are several PCL parks that are like this, but Vegas has just been notorious since this newer ballpark opened. Because we haven't been to this ballpark. When we went there, it was one of the last years of that field when it was still a Mets affiliate. But yeah, this is laughable. So I think MLB should probably, like, there are a lot of fans that are confused by this. This whole situation, it kind of snuck up on us too. So now that said, I think there's also a reasonable argument to say that it's a farce that they are playing six major league games there this year. I think you can totally argue that. Am I worried about the future of the A's? I mean, there's a lot of questions about the A's ballpark in addition to the park factors. But yeah, I mean, these games are just, it's just not what a Major League Baseball game should be. And yeah, it was quite the throwback because this is what 2019 felt like sometimes.
Absolutely. So Phoenix is 1,000 feet above sea level and Vegas is twice that.
Yeah.
Vegas is 2,000 feet above sea level. And then Denver, obviously the Mile High City, is 5,200 feet above sea level. So Denver is kind of a different level.
Yeah. But if it's inside, it's just, it's not going to, if it's a dome, it's not going to play in the same way. A's responded with five homers of their own on Tuesday. And I mean, listen, dude, if that Rockies pitching staff goes in there this weekend, pad those
Take
stats,
the
baby.
Over.
We just talked about all-star candidates. Everybody on the A's, if you would like to be in Philadelphia and you're not Nick Kurtz and
Lock
you're going to be there anyway, this
Lock
is
in.
The time to shine, baby. Lawrence Butler, you want to save your season. Zach Geloff, you want to make a push. You know, maybe even Aleka Williams
one
hit a
week,
home run.
If you had one week, one opportunity for everything you ever wanted.
This is every
Vegas.
Homer you ever wanted.
Would you take Kyle Freeland deep or would you let it slip?
Yo, his palms are sweaty. Knees weak. Shea Langeliers is 5 for 5 and coming up again. Or sorry, knees weak.
It's gone!
Shea Langeliers is 4 for 4 already. All right. We're done, folks.
Wrap it up.
The Brewers.
No mas.
You know what? We'll talk about Luis Lara some other time. Congratulations to him on generational wealth. I'm very happy for him. Brewers prospect signing a $31 million extension before he gets to the big leagues. Unfortunately, he's not even new. He's the third guy to do it. So how special are you really, Luis Lara? I guess we're going to find out. I do think we'll see him in the big leagues at some point. I think now would be a great time to call him up. Let him start off his career strong and hit some home runs in Vegas. Let's go. Let's get this guy up here.
I'm going to head over too and get some swings off. That is our show. Enjoy the beginning of the World Cup. We'll get the World Cup pick 'em set up.
Oh yeah. Let's get that group set up.
You can beat us or lose to us or crash out of the group stage. We just love crashing out of the group stage. Life is what happens between crashing out of the group stage, baby. And this year, harder than ever to crash out of the group stage because, you know, participation trophy, everyone gets to the round of 32. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing this podcast. And thank you to Andrew Hartz for helping Andrew Hartz. Andrew Hartz with the solo dolo performance. Complete game. Complete game shutout. from Andrew Hartz on the production
front.
Hey,
you don't see that very often anymore. So
Throwback.
For holding it down. We appreciate it. You can email us, baseballbarbecast@gmail.com. And we'll be back on Friday. Talk to you then.
Your wife get those Phoebe Bridgers tickets? Mine did.